excerpts from Abraham Lincoln's 1837 address to the Young Men's Lyceum in Springfield, Illinois. All the armies of Europe, Asia, and Africa combined could not by force take a drink from the Ohio or make a track on the Blue Ridge in a trial of 1,000 years. At what point, then, is the approach of danger to be expected? If it ever reach us, it must spring up amongst us. It cannot come from abroad. If destruction be our lot, we must ourselves be its author and finisher. Hi there, and welcome to Here's a Thought, the blogcast for people who overthink. I'm your host, Jan M. Flynn, a writer for whom overthinking is kind of like breathing. I do it automatically, but I get more out of it when I pay attention. But if you're anything like me, sometimes you'd like to get away from those nonstop voices in your head. So once a week, I offer you a little break by listening to the ones in mine. Last weekend, I saw the movie Civil War. Now, there is a film that demands some serious thinking. It's not the kind of movie where you just toss your popcorn box on the way out of the theater and go for pizza. It's the kind of movie that leaves you a little bit in pieces, pieces that you have to put back together, hopefully in a newly helpful order. And what seeing this movie did for me was to help me fully embrace a philosophy called tragic optimism. If that sounds like an oxymoron to you, you know, an expression that contains internal contradictions like giant shrimp or guest host, stay with me. Because tragic optimism may be exactly what we need in troubled times, even if, and especially if, the times we live in get a lot more troubled than they already are. Now, to be clear, this is not a movie review. It's more like a debrief, because seeing Civil War, the 2024 film written and directed by Alex Garland, requires some metabolizing. After the film, I went to the ladies' room where I encountered other women who'd just come from the same screening. We all looked shaken. "Oh my God," we said to each other, "that could so happen." And as my husband and I left the cinema, we passed a group of other patrons huddled in a somber circle, talking in hushed voices about the film. I was tempted to intrude. "Please, can we talk about this?" Even as I record this, I'm still processing. Honestly, I want everyone in America to see Civil War, everyone over the age of 15 anyway, not because it's action-packed, which it is, or stunningly photographed, which it is, or superbly directed and acted, ditto, but because it's probably the most important movie of at least the last 5 years. It's described as a dystopian war film, but that hardly conveys its power. We learn right away that there is a U.S. president who has claimed a third term. He publicly insists his forces are about to achieve victory against a seceded faction, an unexplained coalition of Texas and California. The war rages among strip malls and neighborhoods, scenes of devastation in formerly placid environments that look heartbreakingly familiar. The conflict has clearly gone on long enough that people have found strategies to adapt, some of which are brutal. But this is not a film about politics. It doesn't take a stand on right or left or which side of the conflict is morally defensible. It doesn't explain how the war started or what the opposing groups believe about themselves or each other. The point isn't which side is better or worse. The point is to, like the journalists who are the film's main characters, bear witness. To behold, without looking away, at what could follow when the basis of American democracy, which currently seems more like a tissue-thin membrane than a firm foundation, rips apart. Please do go see Civil War, but don't take the kids, and maybe skip the popcorn. But then what? I'm not asking you to go so you can be appalled and depressed, and I certainly don't advocate that you use viewing Civil War, as I fear some will, to further distance or desensitize yourself to the horrors that could come on top of the ones that already exist in real life. Kirsten Dunst's character in the film, who's a seasoned war photographer, says that she spent her career capturing images from foreign conflicts because she'd always thought she was sending home a message. Don't do this. The hope, I assume, of the filmmakers is that we heed that warning, that we don't do this. But what if we do? Or what if any of the delicate fuses on the world's other powder kegs, Ukraine, Gaza, Israel, Iran, Sudan, etc., go off? Or what if we tip over the irredeemable edge of climate crisis? What if we have to live in the aftermath? Now, I'm not being a pessimist, even though it might sound like it. Despair and cynicism don't do us any good. What I find helpful instead is an approach developed by Viktor Frankl, one that he termed tragic optimism. If you're not familiar with Viktor Frankl, he was a psychiatrist who lived through most of the 20th century, but he's best known for having survived the Holocaust, during which he spent a total of 3 years among 4 concentration camps, including Auschwitz. His father died in the Terezin ghetto, his brother and mother died at Auschwitz, and his wife died in the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp. And when he returned to Vienna, a survivor, nothing of his old life, not his family, not his home, not the vibrant Jewish culture there, remained. But instead of caving in or giving up, he wrote a book, Man's Search for Meaning, first published in English in 1959. It became an immediate bestseller, and in 1991 was listed as one of the 10 most influential books in the U.S. by the Library of Congress. Frankl's experiences in the camps underscored what he'd already been developing before the war, logotherapy, from the Greek logos, or meaning, based on the concept that the primary human drive is to find meaning in life. In the camps, Frankl had seen that those who could find meaning in the worst circumstances were the ones who were most likely to survive and to emerge with their humanity intact. It's a book that has as much relevance today as it did when it was first published. It's one that's worth reading if you haven't yet, and rereading if you have. I'll include a link to it in the show notes. But more recently, I have read his short essay explaining his concept of tragic optimism. That essay was published in 1984, but it's gotten a lot of recent attention, often proposing tragic optimism as a counter to toxic positivity. And you could see it that way. But tragic optimism could also serve as a guidepost for living through hard times. And I mean really hard times, when what we fear most has happened, and we are left in the ruins of the life that we thought was normal. The essay is also a spur to preserve and defend that which is most worth preserving and defending, because therein lies meaning, whether our actions are modest or grand. Here's what speaks to me about tragic optimism. It doesn't sugarcoat reality. Yet its premise is that meaning and goodness, even joy, are intrinsic to life and are always possible, even as we each face the triad of tragedy, guilt, and death, and even when humanity is at its lowest ebb. Frankl touches on this idea in Man's Search for Meaning. Here's a quote from the book. "I speak of a tragic optimism, that is, an optimism in the face of tragedy and in view of the human potential, which at its best always allows for, 1, turning suffering into a human achievement and accomplishment, 2, deriving from guilt the opportunity to change oneself for the better, and 3, deriving from life's transitoriness an incentive to take responsible action." There is nothing either Pollyanna or despairing in this view. It reminds me of what I've read about Marcus Aurelius and Stoicism. It's a forthright embrace of what's in front of us, a firm intention to make the best of it that we can, to find, in whatever we are experiencing, that basic human drive, meaning. In Frankl's view, what truly crushes the soul is a sense of meaninglessness. And yet, even if conditions are terrible, if we can discover meaning, life is always, always worth living. Here's a quote from his essay I find stirring. "Once an individual's search for a meaning is successful, it not only renders him happy, but also gives him the capability to cope with suffering." And this one. "Even the helpless victim of a hopeless situation, facing a fate he cannot change, may rise above himself, may grow beyond himself, and by so doing change himself. He may turn a personal tragedy into a triumph." And there's this eye-popper. At any time, each of the moments of which life consists is dying, and that moment will never recur. And yet, is not this transitoriness a reminder that challenges us to make the best possible use of each moment of our lives? It certainly is, and hence my imperative. Live as if you were living for the second time and had acted as wrongly the first time as you are about to act now. Wow. With unsentimental compassion, Frankl challenges us to put some distance between our reactions and our actions, to ask ourselves, is this the best possible use of this moment? It's a tall order, but I suspect Viktor Frankl and Marcus Aurelius would agree that we weren't put here to do what one of the Civil War characters wryly remarks that her parents, tucked away on a farm outside of the conflict zone, are doing, pretending none of this is happening. Frankl doesn't mean we should plunge ourselves into difficulty and pain if we don't have to. There's nothing noble about unnecessary suffering, which he calls masochistic rather than heroic. But if tragedy or loss or devastation comes our way and there's nothing we can do to change the situation, we still have a choice. We can look for opportunities to transcend the wretchedness of our conditions, to turn tragedy into triumph, even if only in the smallest and most personal ways. Nothing that happens to us takes away our freedom and our responsibility to choose our attitude. Now, right now, my world is not falling around my ears, and odds are that neither is yours. It's a safe assumption that if you're listening to this, you are not huddled in the rubble of Gaza, or scrabbling an existence in a refugee camp in Syria, or watching your children starve in the Democratic Republic of Congo. But we know that such things are happening to people just like us. The movie Civil War alerts us to the real and present danger that America is on a knife's edge, poised between maintaining our role as the nation that offers its help to countries in distress, or plunging into the misery of internal warfare. Neither outcome is inevitable. All of us who are capable are faced with a choice: to pretend that none of this is happening, or to do whatever we can to build the future we hope to see. We can volunteer. We can vote. We can listen to others without condemning their differences from whatever we're comfortable with. We can be decent people. And if the worst happens, we can bear witness, because life, as Viktor Frankl maintains, has meaning and always will. If we can find that meaning, no matter what is happening to us, at some level, we can not only survive, but triumph. As James Baldwin, who certainly knew something about encountering the worst impulses of mankind, wrote, "Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced." So go see Civil War. Emerge disturbed, but determined. Take whatever action you can to keep that grim vision of our very near future from coming true. Can we do that? I am tragically optimistic. Thanks for listening to this episode of Here's a Thought with Jan M. Flynn. If you enjoy these visits to my inner monologue, please follow the show and take a minute to leave a star rating or review on your podcast app. And let me know what you think or overthink. You'll find ways to reach out to me in the episode notes. Until next time, may you find plenty of evidence for optimism in your own life. May your future hold good things, because we're all in this together. And may all your thoughts be good ones.